Down with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we are, the 28th day of April, 2014. Where in the world did April go? Sure has flown by. At any rate, any way you slice it, this is The Horn. It is Moran Monday on The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home, and just like we say all the time, this is an effort to create independent media that relies entirely, exclusively upon you for its continued existence. And we are fast running out of April, and it looks like we're going to end April in a hole. The fundraising goal this evening is $345. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. So, too, is the traditional mail address. And, frankly, every penny counts at this point in time. It is, it's always hard. It just seems to, have been particularly hard of late. A brutal winter ate us alive. But anyway, that's what we hope to accomplish. Thanks very much to those who kept the hole from getting any deeper than it already is, for that matter. So $345 is the fundraising goal this evening, and that would allow us to go into tomorrow's program with just our regular fundraising goal. I was going to say, where do we begin on this here Moran Monday? But I know where we have to begin. And where we have to begin is with a brief delay in the program. Let me explain you why. For almost going on a week now, we've been having problems with the phone system, and folks have not been able to successfully call into the program. I've been working all day long on trying to get this remedied, and I am told by the folks who provide phone and internet that if I will only reboot the gizmo that brings the phones and the internet in here, that everything will be hunky-dory. Right now, as it stands, all six phone lines work, but they don't roll over. They don't hunt. That's the technical term for it. And consequently, for all intents and purposes, we have only one phone line. So if you guys will simply stand by ever so briefly and not run away, and in the chat room, if you'll tell folks who come like, hey, what the hell happened to Bob? Tell them we're rebooting the system, okay? That means I'll disappear from Skype, and I'll disappear from the chat room, and the stream will go bye-bye too. But it shouldn't be more than a couple or 3 minutes. And then hopefully, and hey, maybe you, me, us, we, we'll test it out and find out if the phone system really does work. Because, God almighty, we pay a ton for it. And when it doesn't work, it feels right frustrating. So just stand by, everybody. What do you mean, Bob who, Jan? Okay, I'm going to wait till I get a response here. Bob who, says Jan in the chat room. Thank you. Topic change in the chat room. System reboot underway. Yeah, I don't have to reboot the computers or the streamer or anything. Ben Birch has been going at it hammer and tongs all weekend. I've been at it. Hey, yeah. Okay. So stand by, and we will be right back. Of course, this doesn't matter for people listening to the podcast. You can just zoom forward until you find audio. But anyway, we'll be right back. See, this is what the engineer usually does, but... And I'm a hell of an engineer. What's that? I'm a rambling wreck from Georgia Tech and a hell of an engineer? Well, I ain't. And ain't. But I'm going to go pull a plug and pull a battery and cross my fingers and hope for the best. I'll be right back. Is this thing on? Yeah, apparently so. 8 minutes past the hour. The reboot is complete, I think. Try something here. All right, I'm just checking to see if this thing's going to hunt. Sorry, there was no way to do this during Dr. Bill's program because I didn't want, as important as what Dr. Bill was talking about, I didn't want to take him off the air. And in light of the fact that nobody is talking about this right-wing yen for a constitutional convention that will essentially destroy our form of government as we know it, I thought it best not to interrupt. Oh, well, this is deliciously screwed up. Line 1 rolled over to line 4. I know, the tech stuff bores you. Let's see where line 4 rolls over to. Probably line Bleen. Yeah, that's the new number between 6 and 7. Nothing yet. Oh, well, I guess mistakes were made. Oops, the baby. I'm going to see if it rolls anywhere else now. God, what must it be like not to be shackled to levels of... Oh, well, line 4 rolled to line 5, which then rolled to line 2. That leaves lines 3 and 6. Well, this is just exciting. I mean, this is, I don't know, not quite as much fun as looking through the space telescope, but there's every bit as much wonder attached to it. Well, there we go, wondering again, me and Clive and Bundy. Hey, it rolled to line three. So we've got 4, 5, 2, 3. So that would mean it should now roll to line six. Let's see. So up there at Chantel, they count 1, 4, 5, 2, 3, 6. Three, sir. And there it is, line six. Well, oh, joyous day, oh, fraptious day, Kalu Calais. My God. Yeah. But at least we know they're rolling one way or another. Hot diggity damn, we're in business. So here in a little bit, we'll open up the phone lines, and you can jump in as you see fit. And we'll conversate and have a high old time. Merciful God. It's all just way too much fun. And now, signing back into the chat room. Good evening, one and all. So anyway, hey, look, we've got an unintentional Moran Monday nomination. 1, 4, 2, 1, 4, 5, 2, 3, 6. 1, 4, 5, 2, 3, 6. Probably ought to go down and get my lottery tickets. Oh, well. And, of course, the Skype line is open as it ever is. Bob Kincaid Horn is the contact address there. I had an email prior to airtime. I had an email from our buddy Marty. Subject line, Moran Monday. Such a crowded field. I don't know if you'll have enough time to scratch the surface in a three-hour filibobster. I don't either. But I like to call this I think we can call this one a high-caliber Moran Monday. Oh, God, you know where we're going, don't you? Sure, why not? Let's go down to Georgistan. This story posted yesterday by Tom Bagioni over at Raw Story. And it's a story of the national pastime. In, of course, the latest state to go absolutely stark raving gun mad. The governor of Georgia signed into law an absolutely harebrained, bloodied up, I mean, it's going to be bloody. He signed into law a bill that allows people to take guns to bars and churches and, hey, look, airports. You know, because the only way to stop a bad terrorist with a gun, with a box cutter is with a good guy with a gun. This is going to work out nicely. I wonder if anybody's bothered to contact Delta Airlines, whose home, of course, is in Atlanta, Georgia, and whose primary central hub, I mean, they got several. There's a hub in Minneapolis and a hub in Salt Lake City. And yeah, that kind of thing. But home to Delta Airlines is Atlanta, Georgia. And home in Atlanta, Georgia is Hartsfield International Airport. Last I checked, busiest airport in the United States, maybe the world. I wonder if anybody's called Delta Airlines to tell them, you know, I don't feel so comfortable flying Delta anymore now that I have to pass through Atlanta, and your average garden variety goob can bring his gun to the airport. Because honest to God, I don't. What does that mean? Does that mean you can take it to the ticket counter, but you can't take it through security? Sooner or later, we're going to see a lot of that done away with, and it'll be that. I mean, you'll get on the airplane, and the in-flight instructional video on how to use your seat cushion for a safety vest will be accompanied by a soundtrack of, you know, the wah, 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 yeah, that thing. Yeah. And I guess people with spurs will be in the seats and have their peacemakers strapped to them. This country's going to hell faster than we thought it was, isn't it? What happened? Really? I mean, see, it's easy to get lost in the minutia of, say, you know, the gun business and people having hissies over having to pay fees to graze cattle on land they ought not be grazing cattle on, and watching Sean Hannity run away from the guy who's grazing cattle on land he ought not be. You know, it's easy to get all wrapped up in that. But when you take a minute and you consider that the right wing, and if you did not catch Dr. Bill today, for the love of God, please download the podcast when it becomes available and listen to it. Because nobody is out there talking about it. The right wing are not talking about it because they want to keep it under the radar. The left wing are not talking about it because the right wing's playing chess and we're playing marbles in the dirt. I wish it wasn't true, but I mean, you know, even the smartest man on the smartest progressive man on the radio isn't talking about this, and you'd think it might get his attention. So Dr. Bill's going to keep talking about it because somebody has to. Because while, you know, Cloven Bundy, Craven, Cliven, who the guy who's mad that Dr. King didn't get the job done, because, see, it's easy to look at him and his high-powered scope-carrying, rifled-up buddies and say, wow, those people are nuts. Because they are, and they're intensely violent, and Otne ute aitbre, if you know one what I mean. But there are some big thinkers on the right wing, and they are very well paid. And they see themselves within striking distance of the long dream of their forefathers, and that is to return America to the way it needs to be. You know, long about 1822 or so. You get tastes of it in Cliven Bundy talking about, I wonder if the Negro was happier when he was picking cotton and had happy singing families. But the high dollar types are out there, and they've got a plan. And if you listen to Dr. Bill's program today, or you get the podcast or whatever, you'll come to understand what's going on here. And this is, you know, this isn't Alex Jones, you know, MK Ultra, cloud seeding, Agenda 21, blue helmets, Common Core, Benghazi. No, this is not that. I have been hollering for years now that the right wing is hell-bent on the outright destruction of this country as we know it. They've achieved a lot of their goals, but they haven't gotten there yet. And this Constitutional Convention provides for a means by which they can get there. Read up on this. Learn about this. Wonder why there aren't banner headlines in newspapers, First Constitutional Convention in History of Country Called For by states. I mean, however the copy editor would write it, why isn't that story out there? Well, that's just the teabaggers, and they're that way, you know. Underestimate this at your peril. Our buddy Grant called Dr. Bill earlier today, and he said, so, and I'm paraphrasing, he said, so after they get their Sharia law amendment, and that's the truth. I mean, Grant was being kind of humorous, but it's the truth. If we started right now trying to come up with a list of everything the right wing wants in this country, well, probably need a Sharia law amendment, and we'll need an English is the only language of Merca amendment, and we'll need a law abolishing the EPA, and we'll need ourselves a nullification law, And we're going to scrap the whole damn Constitution and just put this right in the body. Ain't going to be no mending going on. And, of course, we'll have to make sure that the little fetus persons are protected and that they get a vote. Maybe the church can exercise the vote by proxy for the little fetuses. And we'll need to give the snowflake babies a vote too, because you know just because they're in suspended animation and all frozen up and everything doesn't mean that they ain't people. Merkins. And we'll need to embody right in the body of the Constitution, the new Constitution 2.0, baby. Right to keep and arm bears, and we'll make sure that we strip the citizenship of anybody who says that a guy who needs to take a hog-legged 44 Magnum pistol to go and buy a loaf of Wonder Bread is a big old fraidy cat. We'll need to have a convenient method for stripping that person's citizenship and possibly burning them at the stake for heresy. Oh, religion. Yeah, we will we'll need a constitutional provision declaring that this is a Christian nation, except the Judeo part. Then we'll have the balanced budget amendment, and that's how we'll get rid of Social Security and get the government's hands off the teabaggers' Medicare. Of course, Medicare's got to go too, and so does Medicaid. You begin to get the picture? Mm-hmm. So we need to understand all of this right-wingery as a sort of, as pieces that add up to form a thing that is greater than the sum of its parts. Like being able to take your gun to the airport in Hotlanta. Mm-hmm. Which is where I was going in the first place, Georgia. But it's not just taking your gun to the church or the airport or out there to the bar with you. I mean, you can only take your gun to the bar if you're sober. And, I mean, it's going to take some brave, brave bartenders to look at somebody and say, you got a gun. I ain't serving you. Say that again, partner. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's going to get real interesting. Or maybe the better word is freaking terrifying. Yeah. To wit, you know the gun goobs had their big Clavern meeting this past weekend out in Taliban Indianapolis. And they premiered a new ad, America 2014. You get the tennis ball and the duct tape. I mean, this is terrifying.
Do you still believe in the good guys? Because you are surrounded by a world where madmen are famous and good ones forgotten. Doors are locked and streets have gone silent. Where the gates to success swing open for hypocrites, chameleons, bullies, and yes men.
Where filthy crimes go unpunished, and killers and con artists prey upon anyone who still follows the rules.
The good guys are a lie, they laugh. Everyone's corrupted.
But what do you believe?
Do you believe in people who would rather fail honestly than lie to get ahead?
Do you believe in those who reach out to help, even while they're free to turn their backs? The teacher whose best lesson makes a one-time cheater a last-time cheater.
The parents who work two jobs, raise three kids, sit in school boards, town halls, and church pews because you can't teach values you don't live yourself. The soldier who gives up his life for his brothers to live theirs. It takes courage to be free. A special kind of backbone to reject the world that surrounds you. To sign your name where everyone can see it.
To believe that there is always a right choice and an honest consequence.
That's what it means to believe in America. It's time to believe in the good guys again.
We are the 5 million men and women of the National Rifle Association of America.
Except for the fact that I'm a hired guy, because I'm a not terribly frightening black guy. We are the 5 million members of the National Rifle Association, and I'm the black one. What, aren't the new Black Panther parties members of the National Rifle Association? Oh, God. Did you catch some of... Okay, first of all, you've got the stirring music that generally comes with a summer blockbuster. You've got the line about the teacher who teaches a cheater in school that they'll never cheat again. That's right, up against the wall! I'm the National Rifle Association! You want a cigarette and a blindfold, kid? Jeremy in Vermont with a question. Bob, was that thumping at the beginning of the clip you looking for a direct vein for the dark? If so, I could use one too. Freedom! Wolverines! And what's that BS about an honest failure and everybody's a... What a level of hubris for the NRA. Well, we're the only good people left in America. Are you scared?
Because you're surrounded by a world where madmen are famous.
You're surrounded by a world where madmen are famous. You mean like George Zimmerman? You mean like the guy who shot a guy for texting in a movie theater in Florida? You mean like Adam Lanza, who blasted little children into their constituent parts with a firearm that the NRA insists must be legal for purchase practically anywhere they can...
And good ones forgotten.
Yeah, the good guys are forgotten. Because we've forgotten the good ones who tried to shield the bodies of the little children from the lawful gun owner. We've forgotten the good ones who, unarmed, wrestled a madman named Adkison to the ground at the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Tennessee. In East Tennessee, near Knoxville, didn't have a gun, didn't have nothing, just said, you ain't going to shoot nobody more here, and died. Yeah, they've been forgotten. But they've been forgotten because of the NRA. Because you can't possibly be a good American if you don't have a good gun.
Doors are locked and streets have gone silent.
Doors are locked and streets have gone silent. Yeah. I'll be damned. I guess the United States of America is the first place to ever have locks on doors. Of course, if you had yourself a bazooka sitting there, if you just prop it up next to the couch there, across from the family TV altar, and then you don't have to lock your doors. Yeah, come on through if you're feeling lucky. Chris with an email. Bob, the black guy should have said, the few, the proud, the black. Hell, they should have played America, F yeah, during the ad. Yeah, I think they're working on that one, Chris. where the streets have gone silent. And people lock their doors.
Where the gates to success swing open for hypocrites, chameleons, bullies, and yes men.
Hypocrites, chameleons, bullies, and yes men? What is this, the follow-up to Gypsies, Tramps, and Thieves? What does that even mean, chameleons? Hypocrites, chameleons, bullies, and yes men, and the doors of success open up to them. Are we talking about the sociopaths who make billions on Wall Street? I mean, are we talking about the doors of success that opened up for George Zimmerman? Really? Or the guy who wasted a kid because he didn't like his music? Lawful gun owner, you know.
Where filthy crimes go unpunished, and killers and con artists prey upon anyone who still follows the rules.
Where filthy crimes go unpunished. That's going to come as a real surprise to the people who work in the alleged criminal justice system and funnel human beings into the for-profit prison pipeline, isn't it? I mean, if anything, we've got an overworked criminal justice system because of the number of people we lock up. All those filthy crimes that go unpunished? We have the single highest incarceration rate of any country in the so-called developed world. But, you know, this woman here is I think she's on the verge of tears, and crimes go unpunished.
The good guys are alive, they laugh. Everyone's corrupted.
Who's they? Really, the good guys are alive, they laugh. Everyone's corrupted. Who's making that argument except the Republican Party? When's the last time? Well, okay, there are a couple, but we're leaving that out of this. Who is it that all the time hollers, there's no difference between Democrats and Republicans? I mean, they're all corrupt. They just get, some of them just get caught. And then there's the guy from New York who got caught in a campaign funding scheme involving a mystical rabbi and a go-between, Republican named Grimm from New York's 11th Congressional District got popped today. Yeah. Oh, well, okay. Do continue, terrified, wet pants, National Rifle Association people.
What do you believe?
Do you believe in people who would rather fail honestly than lie to get ahead?
Help, please. Email, phone call, whatever. Help. Does that mean the gun owners are a bunch of failures? Would rather fail honestly than lie to get ahead. We're the 5 million honest failures of the National Rifle Association.
Do you believe in those who reach out to help, even while they're free to turn their backs?
Sure. I believe in those people. I believe that every drop of rain that falls, a flower grows. Do you mean people who selflessly go and work in soup kitchens and missions for the homeless and do all that Book of Matthew stuff about doing it to the least of these, their brothers? Oh, hell no. They're talking about people who pack weapons and think it would have been better if everybody watching Batman had had a goddamn gun in Aurora, Colorado. I don't think they got enough room in the city morgue in Aurora, Colorado for the bodies that would have piled up if the NRA had had its way.
Teacher whose best lesson makes a one-time cheater a last-time cheater.
It's your last time, kid.
The parents who work two jobs, raise three kids, sit in school boards, town halls, and church pews because you can't teach values, you don't live yourself.
You can't teach values, you don't live yourself. And so I guess the message then is that we don't have any values who don't love guns. Hell, I thought I didn't have any values because I wasn't a Christian. I'm getting a little confused here with the people who have all the values. Yeah, we got American values here. We sure do. Our American values are to take a gun with us when we have to go out for go out for a quart of milk and a bag of diapers, because you never know when absolute mayhem is going to break out at your local Wally World. A lot of crazy people in there, crazy dangerous people. Yeah.
The soldier who gives up his life for his brothers to live theirs.
Yeah, that soldier's carrying a weapon as a function of the contract that he made by volunteering for the U.S. military. Not because of, what's the implication here that you know, if those liberals get their way, they're going to take away the soldier's guns? Jesus Christ.
It takes courage to be free, a special kind of backbone to reject the world that surrounds you.
Wait. This is my favorite part. We're back to the NRA's only black guy member. It takes courage to reject the world around you. And you know what they show? They show a tagged up, graffitied up, and it's really quite pretty, really, wall from what is apparently St. Louis. Maybe it's East St. Louis. And that's the world that he's rejecting. I guess this wall mural was painted by, like, hip-hop gangbangers.
To sign your name where everyone can see it.
Really? To sign your name where everyone can see it? Really? Did the NRA just tell us that they'll happily give out their membership list? Because I think it'd be interesting. Well, no, they won't do that because, you know, all us sissy liberals would start persecuting them. But anyway, this is the NRA. They're the only ones with any damn courage in the whole blessed country. By the way, they did. They had their meeting. I don't know if they allowed concealed firearms in the meeting hall. But it's been made clear that the next target, their words, their next target will be a federal law to create reciprocity in every state in the union, so that if you're a gun goob in, say, Idaho, Massachusetts has to let you carry concealed in the Commonwealth. Or if you're a gun goob from Alabama, California has to let you carry concealed there. Oh, what a wonderful world they want us to live in. And that way no state can have a concealed carry law that's got any teeth to it at all. And we're all just going to be gunned up and free. Won't that be a beautiful day? Yeah, because we just don't have enough people carrying firearms to the Wally World to, get that giant box of Ritz crackers, and maybe a haircut and an oil change. I said 5W20. What do you think? My God, I'm a patriot. I'll shoot your ass. Which takes us back to Georgistan. Georgia. Hey, Georgia will blow your mind. We go to Forsyth County, not Forsyth, Forsyth County, which is right next to Atlanta. You might recall Forsyth County as famously being the place where in the late 80s the Klan marched to keep black people from living in Forsyth County, Georgia. But there in Forsyth County, Georgia, they've got the national pastime. They got Little League. And they got parents who care about Little League. And good God, Little League parents can be a nightmare. Well, Georgia just made the nightmare a little more real. There's a park in Forsyth County, Georgia. And children play Little League ball in the park in Forsyth County, Georgia. And this happened last Tuesday. all, you know, all the little baseball players had assembled for their game when a man was noticed. Parents noticed him. And he was walking around, and he'd say, "You see my gun here? Yeah. I'm carrying a gun here, and there's nothing you can do about it. How do you like that, huh?" Karen Robb, R-A-B-B, is one of the parents who was there, and she said, "Anyone who was just walking by, you had parents and children coming in for the game, and he's just standing here walking around saying, 'You want to see my gun? Look, I got a gun, and there's nothing you can do about it.'" He knew he was frightening people. He knew exactly what he was doing. So then the parents, who actually love their children and don't feel real good about a guy walking around a Little League park saying, "You want to see my gun?" You know, it used to be when the guy would say, "You want to see my gun?" He'd be wearing, you know, you could see his socks and his bare legs and the trench coat, and he was creepy and nasty, but he wasn't armed. Children showing up to play a Little League game were hidden away from the man because when he was asked to leave, he said he wouldn't go. He wouldn't leave. Karen Robb added, "It got to the point where we took the kids and brought them into the dugout, and the parents lined up in front of the dugout," which is, of course, the exact opposite of the operative strategy of the Freedom Protectors. Wolverines! Out there in Bunkerville, Nevada, who wanted to put the women and children out front because we want the government to kill them first when they start the massacre. No, the parents put the children in the dugouts, and then they lined the dugouts to protect the children against the bullets from the gunned-up goober, who was, of course, just there protecting freedom. Oh, God. Hell of a story, really. According to local police, they received 22 separate phone calls to 911 reporting the man walking around. "You want to see my gun? Yeah, I got a gun. Ain't not a damn thing you can do about it. Uh-huh. Yeah, I'll show you my gun if you want to see my gun. Yeah, got me gun. Because I'm a American, and I'm a patriot, and freedom. At least in Georgie." So then, because the cops were called 22 times, they showed up. A sheriff's deputy showed up. I guess it was a pair of deputies who showed up. And they walked up to the guy with the gun, and they asked him, what was he doing? And he said, "I got a gun. Ain't nothing you can do about it. See, look here. I got me a permit for my gun." At which point, the deputies looked at the terrified parents and said, "Ma'am, he ain't threatened nobody and ain't made no threatening gestures. He ain't pulled out his gun. So we can't arrest him. Hell, we can't even ask him to leave." Welcome to Georgia. You know, we really, really do... Gosh, I wish this program had greater reach than it does. We really do need to get some letters out to Delta. How about the Coca-Cola Corporation? They're headquartered in Atlanta, aren't they? Aren't there some pretty big companies that are down there in Atlanta? Don't decent people who don't want their children to have to deal with gun-carrying goobers at a goddamn Little League game... Maybe might want to reach out to Delta and Coke and some other companies like that and say, "Oh, by the way, not going to fly Delta. switching to Pepsi. Hell, we're switching to water. And ain't going to do nothing, no how, with no Georgia, long as this law is on the books. And then, of course, just, oh, Chick-fil-A is in Atlanta. Well, hell! Well, you know how it's going to work out now, don't you? Quick as we do that, all the gun goobs will say, well, there's 5 million of us proud NRA members, and we'll be happy to come to Atlanta, armed to the damn teeth. Dwayne Piper is the sheriff of Forsyth County, Georgia. And he said, well, I don't think the youngins or the parents was ever in any danger. But, yeah, and you know, after all, this man is an upstanding citizen of the country. And but I don't think it was appropriate. This is a quote. We support the constitutional right to bear arms. We will not tolerate bad behavior. Which sets up a bit of a dichotomy, really, if you get right down to it. Because when the arm-bearing goob decides to act inappropriately, what do? How much longer before the bullets begin to whiz around like angry hornets? What do you want to bet? And the story is too fresh to really be able to say much about it, but what do you want to bet? Gun Goob here files a lawsuit claiming that the cops violated his civil rights. Hell, maybe he'll find the names of some of the parents and sue them, too, for violating his civil rights to carry a gun around a Little League park and terrify the community. Another parent by the name of Paris Horton had a child trying to play baseball that evening. She said, why would anyone be walking around a public park with a lot of children and parents and people here playing baseball and he's walking around with a gun? I don't think the parents would have been nervous had he just had the gun in his holster and was just watching the game. Well, hell no. I mean, it's the South. Sometimes you got to take a gun with you to a Little League game because, only a good guy with a gun can stop a rampaging 9-year-old with a baseball bat. Karen Robb related what her son asked her after the whole thing was over. We like for our little children to be questioning. The curiosity of a child is a magnificent thing. Even when it's sort of, well, even, it, you know, When they ask the really tough questions like, why is there air? Or why can't I see the air? Or if I can't see the air, why is the sky blue? Or why is water wet? Mommy, will it hurt if I stick my finger in this light socket? We try, because I remember. I'm still trying, and they're teenagers, and I'm still trying. Bless her heart, Doodle has our Doodle has brilliant comic timing. You can never tell when she's playing with you and when she's deadly serious because it comes from the same straight face deadpan. And that one day that she looked at me and said, "Daddy," and I said, "Yeah, honey," and she said, "Was Atlanta, Georgia, really one time all underwater?" I said, "What?" She said, "Yeah, you know the story of Atlanta, how it sunk under the ocean." Oh, but we still, even in those moments where you're kidding, right? Well, and we cherish those moments. Obviously, I haven't forgotten the story of Atlanta sinking beneath the wave. And it opened up a teachable moment. I said, no, honey, it didn't sink beneath the ocean once, but it did all burn right to the ground because it was part of a state that was engaging in treason against the United States. So, you know, there was that. But I feel real bad for Karen Robb, because her six-year-old son simply asked her that evening, after he'd been all excited to go and play a little game of t-ball, six-year-olds, he looked at his mama and said, "Mama, did that man want to kill me?" That's tough. Because, you know, if Mrs. Robb is being honest with her child, the only answer you can give is one that provides no resolution and no comfort. Because the only thing you can say is, "Well, baby, we don't know. Baby, all we know is that there are a lot of people in this country who are scared to death and scared of their own shadows and might shoot at anything. We don't know what would make him want to shoot his gun, baby. But Mama was willing to take the bullet for you because Mama loves you." Is, "Did that man want to kill me?" the kind of question we want children, six-year-old children, asking of their parents in this country? Children are not stupid. They are more perceptive than often we give them credit for. And that child perceived that because that man was armed, that he was potentially deadly. 6 years old is probably a little too early to be explaining about, say, Sandy Hook Elementary School. Where the man certainly did want to kill children, and did so very effectively, so thoroughly killing six-year-olds like little Ethan, that their parents could only identify them by the clothing that they had dressed them in and sent them off to school that day. But notice that Paris Horton was not put off by the presence of the firearm. Paris Horton is a good American. And said, "I don't think the parents would have been nervous had he just had the gun in his holster and was just watching the game. It was the walking around the public park and talking about his gun part that made Paris Horton nervous." Of course, I remember going to a high school football game this past autumn and barely getting to watch the football game because I hardly ever took my eye off the guy that I noticed walking into the game with a goddamn gun strapped to his hip, because you never know, you know, when you go to that two-county rivalry game, you just never know when, you know, it's going to break out, right? A reporter from WSB made contact with the individual who refused to discuss the incident. And the reporters at WSB, while they gave the name of the six-year-old who was afraid that the man was wondered if the man was going to wanted to kill him, would not release the name of the man with the gun who was walking around the Little League park saying, "You want to see my gun? Yeah, I got a gun. Not a thing you can do about it, because freedom! Wolverines!" Yeah. Because WSB is afraid that he'll sue him for publicizing the fact that he was walking around asking people if they wanted to see his gun. because apparently there is nothing illegal in this country about walking around and terrorizing an entire Little League park full of parents. Okay, so wait a minute. There were 22 911 calls, and there are 9 people. So apparently parents on both teams called, and maybe 3 others. Maybe those were the bench warmers. Good. I can't wait to read the follow-up story where this bastard sues for having his civil rights violated. Lots of email coming in over this story. Marty noting, that law in Georgia guarantees that if I must go through Hartsfield Airport, I'll not be leaving the gate area. Yeah, but I mean, what if you work at Popeyes? They're inside the secure area, and you just feel like, you know, you got a right, you know, in case the terrorists decide they want some fried chicken. What if, you know, do they get to carry their guns in? I don't know the answer. And welcome to the dream world of the National Repiglick and Rifle Association, where nobody has an answer and everybody may have a gun, and you may have a go meet Jesus moment in even the quiet, well, hell, when the trailers are rolling in the movie theater and your little phone goes burp and bang, you're dead. 'Cause America. Our buddy Michael with an observation, on the NRA ad. Sign your name. Where? What? Bob, I can't even see the thing, but based on your description, a black man rejected the world around him, which was portrayed negatively as containing beautiful, your word, graffiti. And the very next line is a white guy saying proudly, I assume, sign your name where everyone can see it. Have I got that right? Oh, you're right there, Michael! Even for the NRA, that strikes me as a profoundly irony-challenged moment. Another term for graffiti is tagging, i.e. signing one's name where everyone can literally see it. Oh, I didn't even think about that. Michael observing, the dumb is strong with these people. And dangerous. Captain Mary in Memphis noting, take a bear out to lunch today. They just don't come no better than a bear. Some folks even see the bear in me. Sung by the inestimable Lyle Lovett. Chuckle. I didn't know. That's beautiful. And it just, oh, God. And Luda, with an observation, gun goober, how fast and what would the cops have done had there been a 911 call saying, there's a black man with a gun threatening white women and children? Oh, he goes straight into the park to prison pipeline, make no mistake about it. Unless he's that, you know, that guy from, you know, the NRA. Yeah, okay. Yeah, thank you, Marty. Oh, Bob, there you go again. Now, you know that Barack Obama himself walked around Sandy Hook Elementary and gun those kids down. Isn't that what Alex Jones and the like are saying? You're absolutely right, Patriot. It was a false flag operation done at the orders of Barack Hussein Obama of Kenya. But like I said, it's kind of a high caliber Monday. And for a high caliber Monday, where better to go than South Carolina? A law enforcement authorities in South Carolina have, and we don't know if they may have violated the fellas' rights. Last we heard, authorities in South Carolina were asking questions of an 8-year-old Patriot boy.
Wolverines!
Because law enforcement had received reports that he was firing an assault rifle over the head of passing pedestrians on a street there in Rock Hill, South Carolina. No, really. That happened Saturday after someone called police to report that there in Rock Hill, South Carolina, an 8-year-old had a weapon down to Glen Street. And the police went and asked questions. Oddly enough, the children were not walking around saying, "Look at the gun.
Look at my gun. Yeah, I'm carrying a gun and there's not a damn thing you can do about it."
Like the guy in Forsyth County, Georgia was, but, well, they were firing a few warning shots over the head of passing pedestrians. According to a newspaper called The Herald, the child took officers into his home where they found a .22 caliber semi-automatic rifle underneath the bed. There was one round in the chamber and one round in the magazine. They also found a pair of shell casings on the ground outside the house. Upon further inquiry, it was discovered that a 13-year-old babysitter had been charged with watching the children. And when asked, Mama said, "It is not my gun. That there gun belongs to a convicted felon." Naturally, no charges were filed against the little tyke. The rifle, however, was taken into custody. Its rights will have to be jealously protected. And it is under South Carolina law, it cannot be destroyed. It has to be put back into the stream of commerce so some lawful gun owner can get back to protecting freedom with it. So they're done investigating the little one, but they are trying to investigate to find out who the convicted felon in question was who owned the gun. Yeah. Here, I'll shoot it. You shoot it next. Doesn't this just fill you with patriotic pride? Knowing that 8-year-olds are out there protecting freedom and guys at Little League parks are protecting freedom. Yeah. Oh, there's more. Yes, there is. So we've been to Georgia, and we have been to South Carolina. Now we're off to Texas. Because freedom has to be protected. In so many, it has to be protected all around this here country. The San Antonio News Express News reporting that a 17-year-old male has been taken into custody. And I'm sure the NRA will get right on the case because we can't have, maybe he'd signed his name and showed that he was rejecting the world or some such. Madison High School in somewhere in the San Antonio area. Horrified parents called police to tell police that their 17-year-old son had run away. After noticing that the 17-year-old had run away, they noticed that three of their Freedom Protecting firearms were also gone from the home. Well, they finally found him. He was at school, at Madison High School. He had two loaded firearms and a knife in his backpack, and then also told the police that he had stashed an AK-47 semi-automatic military-grade rifle. He'd stashed it in a trash can in the restroom. Northeast Independent School District spokesperson Aubrey Chancellor told KSAT, the student said that he had planned making some demands over the public address system announcements later today at Madison High School. He didn't say specifically what those demands were, but he did say if those demands were not met, he'd planned on committing violence. I love this part of the story. It was not immediately clear if the student had planned a mass shooting, but authorities said they would continue to talk with him. Also, as part of the story, the San Antonio Express News noted that school districts all across Texas had lost millions of dollars in attendance revenue. Because, you know, that evil federal government that Rick Perry hates so much, they pay money to school systems to just get butts in seats. They lost millions in attendance revenue in recent days after email threats warned of a mass shooting at a school. Like I said, it's a high-caliber moron. Now, of course, the NRA would tell us that the only thing that will stop a bad 17-year-old with three guns and a knife is a good guy with a gun. See, I'm one of those squishy liberals who thinks that maybe continuing to talk to the young man might be a good idea. That maybe, just maybe, finding out what made him want to consider resorting to violence might be beneficial, that this might be a learn, if not a teachable moment, then at least a learnable moment. That maybe there's value in helping a young 17-year-old boy to not think that massacring people is a way to solve his problems. And then again, I know, it's Texas. And I know, Dr. Allen reminded me the other day not to think that. And I don't think poorly of all Texans, because I know that there are more good progressives and liberals in Texas than there are in, because of the simple population dynamics of the state, than there are in some allegedly liberal states. So I don't paint with a broad brush there. But I do wonder if maybe mommy and daddy aren't giving a second thought now to whether or not it's a good idea. Because see, they told police that three firearms were gone. What the story does not tell us is three firearms out of how many. Yeah. Now, nobody in law enforcement, nobody in social services, nobody know-how, no way, will ask those parents maybe if they think it might be a better idea to lock the firearms up in a safe. Well, what am I going to do if somebody comes to break into my house? How am I going to defend myself? No one will ask the parents if it's a good idea to have a house full of guns. Because this here is, after all, America. Right? Sure. But it gets, it actually gets a little more frightening. During their Clavern meeting in Tallahassee, Indianapolis, the final day of the Clavern, featured NRA Youth Day. Media were forbidden to cover the Youth Day activities. Taliban Indianapolis TV 6 had a little bit of coverage. Let's see what they... It was partially sponsored by Weatherby. Weatherby makes some expensive shooting rifles. And they stated publicly, Weatherby is proud to help support NRA Youth Day and make it a special experience for all the participants. We very much appreciate the opportunity to partner with the NRA in providing opportunities for our youth to learn more about our industry and all the fun the outdoors has to offer, whether it's hunting, shooting, or rodeoing, because we don't want children doing any of that squishy liberal stuff like hiking or photography or rock climbing or biking. If it doesn't involve brutalizing animals or carrying a firearm, screw it, it ain't American. Yeah. Mike Schweibert, Vice President of Marketing for Weatherby, made that statement. One wonders why the NRA was so terrified to have media cover this. The Guardian article says that the NRA expected that children participating in Youth Day would run around the convention hall and stop at exhibitors' booths for pit stops because they were theming it on racing. Who all was pit stopping? Well, let's see. Smith & Wesson had a pit stop. Remington had a pit stop. Weatherby had a pit stop. And that's where they would give out gun safety brochures. Yeah. And I'm not sure, but they may have been offering a gun giveaway to these children. Wow. By the way, about 1.7 million American children live in a house where loaded guns are left unlocked. You know, like in Rock Hill, South Carolina. Or like in San Antonio, Texas. Or that little community in Kentucky where the Cricket 22 rifle was used to, by a five-year-old to blow away a three-year-old. Was that right? Was it a five-year-old and a three-year-old? Something like that? Yeah. Oh, sweet Jesus. It, by the way, was it this same meeting where, she's not allowed to compete anymore, but Godzilla from Wasilla made an address there where she declared that if I was in charge, waterboarding is how we would baptize the terrorists. Yeah. Sarah loves some torture. Almost makes you worry a little bit about Tad, doesn't it? Very true, Stockton Larry, in the chat room. There ain't no such thing as a free lunch. On the other hand, guns! Free guns! Lord almighty. Big thanks going out this evening. Early in the day, Chris took us down to the $345 fundraising level. And shortly thereafter, just 20 minutes into the program, our good friend Beth from down Texas way, took us down to 320. Thank you, Beth. And Sal just took us down to 315. And that help is mightily appreciated. We got a stack of bills to pay, and it seems like we're forever catching up. That's just 32 folks at 10 bucks a piece, and we got more than 32 folks listening by a long shot, and even more once you count in the podcast. So 320 bucks, 32 people, 10 bucks a piece, 64 people at 5, 16 people at 20, 8 people at 40, 4 people at 80. Man, I'm doing my ciphering real good today. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that, Texas T. Then there's this thing called a smart gun out there that would maybe cut down on the number of people who are slaughtered as a result of the raving paranoia of the gun goober right wing. Yeah, she's getting death threats for suggesting a smart gun. And this is just the beginning. I promise you, it's just the beginning. 17 minutes past the hour, we are an hour and 17 minutes into the program. I'm gonna call timeout on the filibobster and open up the phone lines, which work. The hunt group doesn't exactly hunt like we'd like a hunt group to hunt. How much hunting would a hunt group do if a hunt group could hunt? Let's see. We're ringing 1 to 4 to 5 to 2 to 3 to 6. But the important thing is that it's ringing. So if you want to get involved with the program, and let me just throw this out as a reminder. We love all of the Horn family, just the Horn family commune congregation, just loves first-time callers. So if you've never called the program, you are never going to call a program where it is easier to carry on a conversation than it is right here. If you're new to the program, nobody's going to run you off. You can have all the time you need. It'll be a real, I think it'll be a real pleasant experience for you. So if you're a first-time caller, jump right in. The conversation's fine. Not only are the traditional phone lines phoning, but so too are the Skype line is wide open. Bob Kincaid Horn is that contact account. Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaid. Well, maybe they're not working so good. I just went to put a call on hold, and it went away. We shall see. By suggestion from Captain Mary in Memphis, yeah, little Lyle Lovett. This is the Horn. This is listener-supported conversation radio, radio unlike any other that you keep on the air. We'll be right back. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Bear up to my bear up to my bewildered breast. Some folks even see the bear in me. They sold me the bear and take him on out to lunch. And even though your friends may stop and stare, just remember that's a bear of the bunch. And it just don't come no better than a bear. So meet a bear and take him on out to lunch with you. And even though your friends may stop and stare, just remember that's a bear there of the bunch. And it just don't come no better than a bear. No, it just don't come no better than a bear.
Bears, Lyle Lovett, by suggestion from Captain Mary in Memphis, and a fine suggestion it was. They don't come no better than the bears. Interesting line, that. This is Moran Monday on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid, and had a note come in via Skype from our buddy Asa in Vancouver. Oh, man. Oh, my Lord, Bob. You killed me with the 8-year-old
Wolverines.
That was a Phil Hendry moment. Well, I'll take that as a compliment, I think. I'm still picking my guts up from all over the floor. I got a gun. There's nothing you can do about it. What do you think of that? Yeah, call 911 again, and I'll tell them sissy deputies the same thing, uh-huh. Because I got some freedom here in America. Because I'm the NRA, and I signed my name proudly. Only ain't nobody going to give up, because then that'd be like gun registration. You know, that's the only people want gun registration, people that ain't got no Jesus. Nothing, no constitution. So, well, hey, let's, all right, I pressed this button with no small amount of trepidation. Let's find out if the phones work. Hey, welcome to the program.
Great amount of trepidation, huh?
Yeah, well, hey, my trepidation paid off. Good evening, Bill.
Well, I do that to a lot of people anymore.
Well, if I'd known it was you, I would have felt that it wasn't. It's not the caller. It's the system. You just, you know, when this thing's rolling over from 1 to 4 to 5 to 2 to 3 to 6, God only knows who you're going to get.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is why I'm doing business on a cell phone company. It's set up like a landline, you know.
Yeah.
But it's sell because the system here, you know, I was sitting here talking one day and the phone exploded in my ear. And we had to really bust them to get them out here to fix it. I mean, well, I don't know if Carter did the right thing when he went after Bell or not. I don't know anymore. Sometimes you take away these guys' monopoly, they won't play anymore, Bob.
Yeah, but you know what? It had to have been a good thing because it only took about, what was that? That was the mid-70s, wasn't it?
Yep.
It only took another 25 years or so for long-distance tolls to go away, mostly.
Yeah, wasn't that a... Well, as I say, I had some trouble with one of the guys who was trying to help me after the sickness and the illness. And people keep saying stroke. I keep saying, well, it was a near stroke, but thanks to family members.
Sounded pretty strokey on this end, Bill.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was starting.
I don't think you were near it. I think you were in it.
Yeah, I was in it. But I was there, and they knocked it out within an hour or so. You know, the memory got hit a little bit. Names are sometimes hard to dig up. Names that used to come to me real quick, but like my own. No, I'm kidding.
He'll be here all night.
Yes. Yeah, this gun situation. Always, because I always think funny. Then again, I don't know, when you were growing up, it was past that, wasn't it, where I mean, you get a Roy Rogers set of guns for Christmas.
Oh, well, not Roy Rogers, but no, I had toy guns. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, that was...
I think my last one was a sort of cork pop gun version of a squirrel rifle. You know, the Kentucky rifle.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hunting is, I listen to an outdoor show on Sunday, and these guys, they lost me yesterday when they started talking about the candy bar with the soft center, you know, the Nugent bar.
Oh, yeah,
Nugent. They started talking about him. Uncle Ted, they called him.
Oh, jeez.
Honey, if that was my uncle, I'd...
Hey, why didn't he make his way out to Bunkerville, Nevada? I'm still wondering about that.
Well, why didn't I want to know why he, when he went for his draft examination, he hadn't bathed or cleaned up after himself, and he went from, I don't think people were bullshitting about that, Bob. I think he did it.
I think he was being truthful. Now, later on, he said, nah, I was just screwing with that reporter. Because I could tell he was a liberal.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I don't buy that.
Because I know people who pull that kind of stuff, but they were, they were the kind of person who just would not get up and talk about how badass they were, you know. That wasn't what it was about. It never was like that with me. I didn't like the idea of, it's funny, after my first split with my first wife, I was dating a young woman who had a 2-year-old child. And Bob, I never went in that house with that gun loaded. It was unloaded outside before I went in, and it was put way up high where, hell, I couldn't reach it, much less a 2-year-old. It just, you have to have ingrained in yourself that these aren't toys.
Well, but it's not just that, Bill. You were talking about when I was a kid growing up. Well, let's remember, that happened in the Deep South. And people weren't clamoring back then. Nobody was running around saying that their freedom was somehow being infringed because they weren't packing a pistol to go to Kroger's or A&P.
I can't remember
as a child if I ever saw an ordinary person on the street carry. I don't think I did. I never saw anybody carrying a firearm, unless it was a cop.
No, I wasn't. I got a bad rap for a while, but I said, hey, look, I'm traveling. God knows where I'm going to be traveling on any given night. And the damn problem is that probably your best customers were people who couldn't find their way out the door without crawling to get there.
Occupational hazard.
Occupational hazard, exactly. So, but it's got, I don't know if it's ever going to stop with these folks. And this guy out west, he's been feeding at the government trough, he doesn't raise pigs, he raises cattle, but he's been feeding at the government trough, and he doesn't want to pay for it. Because when you push these guys down deep enough, usually it's about, the old story, it's about the money.
Most always is.
We used to say follow the money a lot in the 70s, a pass it off connotation as to what was going on, that there's somebody who will find a way to cheat or steal in any department of the world that you look at. There'll be somebody, when you go to a supermarket, sometimes I wonder, are they holding the gun on me with the prices they're charging? I cooked a piece of salmon tonight for the first time in years that I haven't eaten the stuff, and,
any good?
And my piano player brought it in. My ex-piano player brought it for me, and it's like, God, I felt like I was held up when I paid for it.
Wild caught or farmed, or do you know?
Don't know. The store...
It's kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't, but I'm not going to ruin your salmon or anything.
Well, one of the stores, it's to me a brand new store. It's a whole different concept. The name of the store is even different. I can't even think of it right offhand because I didn't go there with them. And it was good tasting, but you're right. I don't know anymore whether stuff is farm-raised. Well, I know catfish. A lot of catfish are farm-raised, no?
Yeah, but every now and then you run across some, the problem being mercury. And there's just about no way, if you're having fish, there's no way to get away from mercury. I was out and about the other day, and because of my metabolism and everything, if I start getting hungry, I know I got to eat. And there's not always a, gee, let's wait and get home kind of situation, because if the blood sugar gets all boogered up, you know, I fall apart. So I was trying to be good, and I stopped in at one of the local fast food fish emporiums, which probably was not the smart. But so there's all this fried stuff, and then over on the corner of the board, there's like baked cod. And it's sitting there on a bed of lovely rice, and it comes with an ear of corn and a couple of hush puppies. And I thought, okay, I'll try that. And I did, and as baked cod goes, it was pretty damned good. But I swear, it was, that piece of cod was no bigger, Bill, than a playing card. No joke. Not quite as thin, but, you know, length by width, playing card.
Well, there's been some problems with the, I think cod was one of the fish they're having problems with.
Well,
it's fun.
We've overfished.
Yeah.
The entire world.
Yep.
And some you're better. But the other thing is that even if it says cod, you don't know if it is. I remember that story about the survey from probably less than a year, where a food quality and safety bunch went in and started testing tuna. Was it? I think it was tuna.
Yeah.
And it turned out that a whole bunch of the white tuna that wasn't. It was a fish that was kind of similar. But you remember stories like this because it said that the body had a hard time digesting it, and it could lead to, and I apologize to anyone having dinner right now, anal leakage.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And so I've been a little, looked a little askance at that. So I don't know if I got cod or carp or, you know, what, or just soylent fish, you know.
Well, the big deal was being advertised when I was maybe as young as 13 or 14 was Lake Erie Blue Pike. And that damn fish had been out of existence for years. And I went to a seminar from the state of Ohio on, what's the big fish, the muskie?
Yeah.
And how they literally were fished out in the 1880s. People went crazy catching them.
I was watching a comedian the other night. Just wanted a giggle, and it was Louis C.K. And he had this bit about how he despised, you know, when he lived in the city, he thought deer were cute and beautiful, and moved out in the country, and all of a sudden he hates deer now.
They're stealing his apples and everything else they can eat.
Yeah, right, everything changes out here. But in the course of it, I was reminded of the fact that deer were hunted almost to extinction by about 1900, Bill. And they were repopulated specifically for sport.
Yep.
And that's one of those unstated things that comes along in conversations about the noble sport of hunting. And I'm not going to take anybody on over hunting, but let's understand that we cannot support a population on that kind of thing. We very successfully hunted the deer to near extinction in the first place. You know, the same with just about every living thing in this country. And only by virtue of determined efforts have we got any kind of a wildlife population here at all.
Well, this one guy, one of these guys on the show, he likes to hunt squirrel. No, I don't. You, that's your department. You ever taste them?
Oh, yeah. Squirrels tasty.
Yeah.
And again, squirrels are only there because they were deliberately repopulated. Only in this case, it wasn't necessarily for hunting purposes, but rather because people like to see squirrels in parks.
Yeah. Well, I used to get a chain of them. I'd be sitting on my front porch with a bag of animal peanuts, and these critters would be running, they'd be running a merry-go around. And friendly, they'd come up and they'd put their front paws on my hand and gently remove the peanut. Of course, I could have got bit, I suppose, too. You know. But yeah, the old Euclid Beach Park, the old amusement park, has been converted to apartments, and I did some security down there. And, yeah, there was a lot of, it could become an outside cocaine market after a certain time of night. So my rules were observe, don't interfere, and if it's an apartment tenant, write it up, you know.
Yeah.
If people would use the parking lot just as a place to come in, pull in, make their deals, and away they'd go. And I just wasn't about to get involved in that end of the thing. Lake County is so heavy with heroin right now, Bob, it isn't even funny.
That's just sad.
And that was, you know. Another thing, we had a situation. I don't know if you heard anything about this or saw it. There was an alt music show down in the 117th in Detroit area, which is not far from where I was living on the west end. And a mob of guys showed up with weapons of all kinds. And you know, Bob, they were Caucasian kids.
Huh, fancy that.
And I'm wondering if the depression that's sweeping over this country, and I'm not talking economics, I'm talking about emotions and mentality. I went to see a movie in 1956. The Girl Can't Help It with Jane Mansfield in a leading role, starring role, in a bunch of rock and roll bands. And I mean, 56, that was, hey, you know. But there was a lot of fighting going on after that movie was over with. I mean, kids. There's something about sometimes with the way adolescents used to be, I don't know how it is now, but I hope it never goes back to that, where fighting was just a fact of life. And I didn't like it. I didn't like it much because I'm not really the biggest guy you've ever seen in your life, you know, but I have a nasty disposition and a bad temper, and you put those two things together, and it could be trouble. I still have only a couple of funny-looking knives with buttons on the side. And I don't carry them anymore. Those days are over.
Yeah, those are kept for collecting purposes only.
Well, they're fun in a way to look at. And a buddy of mine's got a cottage down in Tennessee. It was his retirement place that his wife talked him into. And he says, Bill, the gun shows are just going crazy down here, all over. And so some of the stuff you can buy is, you've seen the cover on the one CD that I did that was, in typical Bill humor, it was called Killer Stress.
Yeah.
You know, because that name Killer, of course, has a connotation in music of real strong, good music. So what did I do? A white hat, white tie, black shirt.
Oh, I got it. I got it right here.
Yeah, it's a 32 Chevy that I borrowed from a friend of mine. And my ex-son-in-law said, well, man, I could have got you a Townsend from a collector friend of mine. I said, no, thanks. The Mossberg's bad enough, you know.
Yeah, that's funny.
The whole thing is based on a pun. It's just typical of my thinking patterns, which are twisted and sick. And what do you think, by the way, you're talking about Connors, what do you think of Lewis Black?
Oh, I think he's hilarious and very, very intelligent.
Do you hear Carlin in his delivery?
I think if you listen enough, most all modern comedians are going to have a little bit of Carlin in him, because you know, between him and Richard Pryor, they're kind of the godfathers. Well, and of course Lenny Bruce, the godfathers of modern comedy.
Yeah. You're going back a little way with Bruce because a lot of people don't even have never heard the name. You know, they just the schools of comedy are wonderfully good. Now the guy that used to yell a lot that died in a car accident, he was big in the early to mid '80s.
Oh, Kinison?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't much care for the delivery.
It was shtick, but some of the stuff he said was just straight up funny.
Oh, the stuff was good. Yeah.
And there's a piece out there. I think you can find it on YouTube. You know, he came out of the American Pentecostal tradition, Bill.
Oh, I didn't know.
I mean, he was a Pentecostal preacher. And everybody gets such a kick out of the little bit of shtick I do on Wednesdays. I can't touch that. He really, really knew the delivery and, yeah.
Yeah. Religion, it has been and is seems to be a good hustle, regardless of what part of the earth and what religion, who is the supreme leader of the religion, and of course that also has been carried over into politics, say in 1930s Germany.
Hmm, yeah.
Like when I tell people that at the beer hall push or whatever that, Putsch, P-U-T-S-C-H.
That's the one.
You speak German better than I do.
I don't speak German at all. I can just pretend to pronounce it.
Well, you know who was there with him that night? Mr. von Ludendorff?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, he was there. And, you know, in other words, from what I can gather, the rich folk and the militarists thought they could control this guy. And he fooled them, didn't he? Because there was one guy whose name escapes me, and I was talking about him, I think, last week. He wrote a book after a trip into prison. Because he was one who fought from behind the scenes against Uncle Adolf, didn't care if the whole nation was destroyed. But this guy tried to do things to retain some of the... I think I mentioned my grandmother who came from Germany about 1899, 1900, and
yeah.
How she... The more she learned in 1946 and 45 after the war, the more she... My mother said it would just break her into tears, saying, what happened to the country that I came from? What happened here? Because she would talk about the military parades that they had, you know, from the different wars. They fought one against Denmark, one against Austria, one against France, all within between 1864 and 1870. She said to my mother, there's all these men who I knew were from Jewish families wearing the medals they had won defending the Kaiser. You know, what the hell? To this day, I can't understand people's behavior based on what you looked like or what your name was. Or, you know, it's ridiculous. It's just out and out ridiculous. And this situation that you talk about so much just riles me no end. Because didn't we go through 4 years of one of the nastiest times in the history of this country trying to shake that thing out and just shake it down and destroy a lot of the bad things that were there? I don't know. And some folks just don't know. Well, you are, where you always, the way you put it, the old guy on the bumper sticker?
No, forget hell.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I thought I'd toss it back to you, Bob, but you got it, you know. So I just, I wonder about what the economic future. I talked to a lot of my friends whose kids are growing, but their kids are struggling to try to tell their grandchildren or talk to their grandchildren about what kind of employment to seek, what kind of a vocation to seek. I mean, I fell into music, Bob. I did a lot of different jobs in my life. But music, it was like a snare. Once it catches you, it won't let you go. And if you had any halfway success with it, you hung in there with it. Because what was better to do? But, you know, I mean, I was supposed to go see a great performer a couple weeks ago, and I backed out of it because of something I heard on your show. He's just, unfortunately, too old.
Yeah.
And that's tough because, you know, but it happens. I don't know if I could, I did a TV shot with my friend Colin on Channel 8, which is a Fox Network show. Early news, though. It isn't a network. It's local. And people were saying, he sounded like yourself. Yeah, for 1 minute at a time, 2 minutes at a time, I sure as hell do, you know. After that, It's like, you ever go see much old-timers baseball?
I never actually got to see a game. You know, I mean, like on an old-timers day, I always thought that would be a lot of... Of course, now, the old-timers that show up are the ones that were my heroes as a kid, so...
As a youngster, yeah, exactly. That's how things go. But I don't know, you've got a situation trying to raise youngsters. You're taking your son down the path of radio, Bob.
No, I'm really trying not to. I've taught him a little bit about this, but I'm sincerely hoping he will do something else. Because as Malloy has noted on so many occasions, this is a great job and a lousy business. And that's why we're not running a business here, you know? I mean,
it's a good field because it keeps evolving. But I mean, I threw away more stuff from the TV repair business, and you know how much it hurt me to throw that stuff out? Oh, because I struggled to buy it and pay for it and use it. And but today, I don't think anybody, what's there to repair anymore, you know? There's the trash can. Here's your set. Fix it. Go buy another one.
Yeah.
I don't even have one because those guys didn't bring my other one. They said it was old. Well, it still works. I mean, come on now. I mean, if you get that opinion that if it's old, then I guess it's time for me to check out with these guys, you know, because, you know. And sometimes I wonder about that, too. I have my opinions about how some of these places are used to warehouse the elderly.
Yeah. And that's the right word, warehousing. Our prisons are human warehouses. Our nursing homes are human warehouses. Yeah.
Because they really like to take care. I've had situations with some of these folks who think they can take over your thought pattern. And, that didn't sit well with me at 15 or 16, and it still doesn't sit too well with me now. I have to start thinking their way. But anyway, I won't keep you, but I'm glad to see the phones are up and running. That's really frustrating when you hear some really fine stuff coming out and you can't. I couldn't join in like the Friday night bunch. I learned one of the fellas taught me about something that I had heard happen as far back as the 75, the Yom Kippur War. I woke up to a 6 o'clock news blurb that Nixon had put the Strategic Air Command on, you know, alert. It's a hell of a thing to wake up to, you know. and I never heard of it once. But who was it that was there was servicing planes on Guam, I believe?
Oh, that was Sparky.
Yep. Because now when I heard him say it, first of all, I thought, well, Bill, you weren't recovering from a bottle of gin the night before. You actually did hear that. You know, things happen like that, and you wonder, wait a minute, did that actually happen? And people are slick to take advantage of things. I'll leave you with this one, that when Art Modell fired Paul Brown, it was one of the coldest winters on record, and there was a newspaper strike. Good time.
Well, he chose his timing, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. Well, when he didn't make the Hall of Fame, there's a lot of folks in Cleveland who weren't unhappy with that idea. Although he earned his place in football, not by the way he ran the team, but, you know, Art was connected with New York television people. And this pro football in the mid-50s was really small time, I mean, compared with what it is today. I mean, and I had the blessing of one of my best friends' uncle playing for the Browns in the 55 title game. He came off the bench and had played a game, and then he broke a leg the next year, and then he went to the fellow from Green Bay, you know, the trophy man.
Mm.
See what I mean about memory? How can I forget the man's name? You know, the coach of the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, Lombardi.
Lombardi, yeah. Because Lombardi and the coach.
Well, don't beat yourself up for that too much, because I'm a little bit younger than you, and I struggle with the same stuff. Some of it's just information overload, Bill.
Yeah, it only takes so much. Tom Landry and Lombardi were coaching for the New York Giants, and they practically, if Brown turned around fast, he might whack him in the nose, because they were studying everything he did, because the Giants, from 50 to 55, nobody caught him. The Browns won that Eastern Division title year after year after year.
And they're still trying to get back there.
Well, yeah, and you're a Steelers fan, and I hate to tell you how bad a bunch that was.
Yeah, I didn't come to that naturally. That was by virtue of osmosis or association or something. You know, two years in a house with 20 other Steelers fans will make you a Steelers fan.
Chuck Noll went to the same high school I did for a while.
I didn't know that.
Yep, and he was a messenger guard for Brown.
Well, that's kind of like...
His job was in and out, you know. Carry a play in, run the play, get out, and the next guy comes in and brings another play in, and then Noll on the next play, and...
Yeah, that's kind of like Bossman Wayne here as a kid... shined on a fairly regular basis, shined Mike Ditka's shoes.
Aha. Uh-huh. It's funny how that game is. And it's like this Washington Redskins thing.
Yeah, I've gotten to the point, I say the Washington racist named football club.
Yeah, I mean, Chief Wahoo's bad enough, and they could drop him tomorrow.
Oh, the photo out of Cleveland somewhere around opening day of the Indians fan in red face.
Yeah.
Trying to explain to an actual real live no kidding Native American how he was honoring them.
Yeah.
Oh man, that may be the best sports photo of 2014 so far.
Yeah, well, there was one guy, that Louis Sakalexis, who. That's the story they give you, that he was a player for them, and that's why they named the team that. But, the Browns itself, that was a newspaper poll. And then there was talk that the actual winning name was the Cleveland Brown Bombers, and that was named after a fine prize fighter, probably the best heavyweight fighter in the world until Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, Joe Louis.
Joe Louis was sure. The Brown Bomber.
Well, you know, some of those old team names, whether it be pro or college, came about organically. My favorite story being the Alabama Crimson Tide. They were simply the team from the University of Alabama until one particular game when they played particularly well. A sports writer for, I guess, the Birmingham paper said they rolled down wore red jerseys, and he said they rolled down the field like a Crimson Tide.
Yep.
And boom, a name is born. The same thing with their mascot. You know, the mascot of the Alabama Crimson Tide is an elephant, which makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
Except for the fact that, you the history is that way back when the Rose Bowl was about the only bowl game in the country, Bama went and played out in Pasadena. And their luggage was provided by a Birmingham trunk company, get it, trunk, whose luggage tags were all in the form of an elephant. And somehow it stuck.
Well, one question is, this went on a lot up here in Cleveland in the 50s and 60s before the integration of the Southern college football teams. So we would say these guys wouldn't stand a chance against a standard Big Ten team because of their unwillingness to use black men to play the game. And that's
no. Oh, there was lots of ugliness. West Virginia playing Syracuse, things like that. I mean, there's a history there. Jim Brown is still mad at Sam Huff.
So it's still mad at Huff?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Well, I would be.
Because Sam played linebacker for the Mountaineers and made Jim Brown's life a living hell every time those two teams met. And they met just about every year from, good God, maybe the 30s all the way up to a couple of years ago when Syracuse bolted for the ACC and West Virginia left for the Big 12. It put to bed another one of those ancient rivalries. In fact, every year West Virginia and Syracuse would play for the Schwarzwalder Trophy. That name ring a bell?
Yeah, he was a football name. Was he a coach?
Yeah, he was a coach at Syracuse, but he was also a player at West Virginia.
Ah, okay. Well, that'll cause a little grief. But I'll tell you what, he was a well-hated man in Cleveland.
Well, Schwarzwalder was the man who coached Jim Brown and who coached Ernie Davis after Jim Brown left.
Yeah. I mean, that was a case, too, with a... The Browns drafted Ernie, and then he had, what, leukemia?
Yeah, yeah.
Was killed him young. And there was a dispute between Brown and Modell that Modell wanted Ernie Davis to dress, to stand on the sidelines dressed, and Paul thought that was kind of a lack of class situation to do that.
Yeah, Modell just wanted him in a uniform to put butts in seats.
Well, the old story we used to talk about, and it's changed somewhat. We used to say that defense was what won football games, and offense puts butts in the seats.
Oh, it's still true. It's still true. I mean, one of my biggest griefs about my beloved Mountaineers is the fact that now that we're in the Big 12, apparently a decision has been made that no one need any longer play defense, and we'll just score 70 points a game because that's how the Big 12 plays. It don't work out that way. Because sooner or later, you're going to run up again. I mean, we got blanked by Maryland last year.
The Terrapins? Ooh,
yeah. Yeah, the terrible Terrapins. Whooped us good. Well, and sadly, I don't see anything on the horizon for the Mountaineers in the immediate future. It's just sad.
Well, it's the old story. Two Cleveland Browns players... Carl Kassif was one, and a guy named Don Shula was the other.
Yeah.
That name should ring a bell.
Oh, yeah. Owns a steakhouse in Miami, doesn't he?
Yeah. Some down there, yeah.
Yeah.
But they played for John Kuhl, which is a small Catholic college in Cleveland named after the Bishop of Baltimore. The first Catholic bishop, I think, was John Kuhl. By the way, what's this stuff with... Two popes are now saints. I never heard a word about that over the years.
They manufactured some miracles for both of them.
Oh,
and you know, John the 23rd probably deserved it. Lord knows he's had to wait a while. And then they sort of hustled John Paul II in there so the right-wingers would be happy.
Yeah,
but I got a story for you that the gang... Yeah. Shared with me on Friday evening that's just too good to not tell. Apparently, Jesus was not, I mean, this isn't a joke. apparently Jesus was not too happy with the canonization of John Paul II. You know, he was a real anti-Reformation, conservative hardliner. The last guy was who was Pope was his head of the Inquisition, and it was his job to crack down on people who were complaining about the fact that their children were being raped by priests.
Yeah.
So last week, in advance of the canonization of John Paul II, and in memorialization of that fact, a town in Italy had erected a giant cross, which Jesus then caused to fall on a 21-year-old guy and kill him. It was the John Paul II commemorative cross, and Jesus used it to kill one of his followers.
God. The first guy, the big guy, Pope John?
Yeah, the 23rd.
Yeah, he was an ecumenical man who was trying to so to speak, bury hatchets all over the place.
Well, yeah, and he was trying to drag the Roman Catholic Church into the 11th century AD, whether it wanted to go there or not.
Yeah.
You know, things like allowing people to celebrate the Mass in a language that they actually understood.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of folks who I talk to, older folks, who don't like the idea. They want to go back to the mumbo-jumbo days.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. I mean, what good's a religion if you can understand it? Then you might have to study it. And after that, well, you know, there goes the neighborhood.
After all we've talked, can you see me as an altar boy? I can look back at that.
The only way, Bill, is if you were an altar boy who was subsequently, you know, saw the light or something, heard the, well, I think it was, I personally think it was
well,
when you heard the blues.
It was a status thing in this Catholic children's home, you know.
Oh.
When you're 9 years old, you take your, or 10 years old, your status comes from a lot of different things. By the time I was in the eighth grade, we were supposed to go to church every day when I was in a parochial school in Cleveland in the middle of a rough neighborhood. The nun would find the whole eighth grade class hanging around the men's room smoking cigarettes instead of being in church. So I'll leave you with that. That's more of an accurate picture of how I was by the time I was 13 years old, you know?
Well, you know, how are you going to keep them down on the farm once they've discovered Lucky Strikes?
You got it. Especially in those days. You God almighty. Oh, I don't remember him. Well, Bogart, man, you know, didn't help him, though, did it?
Well, no. In the long term, it doesn't help much of anybody, I don't think.
Nah. Well, anyway, you hang in there. And it's good to have the phones back. I hope I didn't bore people too much.
Oh, I don't think you did. I don't think you did at all. Bill, it is good to hear from you. You take care, and I'm sure we will be talking soon, assuming the phones stay up and running.
Well, say a prayer to Mr. Bell. Maybe he can
come. Yeah, because none of the other praying seems to be doing any good.
Ainsley can come down and slap your phones around for you.
Bill, have a good night. Take care. Bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. And I love wordplay, and I love puns. And I think I got to hand out a toaster to Captain Mary in Memphis, who couldn't help it. There I was talking with Bill about my playing card-sized piece of cod. And lo and behold, landing in my email box, bobkincaid@gmail.com, I should remind people of that. Landing in my email box is an email from Captain Mary in Memphis who couldn't help it. Subject line, "Oh, cod." How do you not open that the minute you see it? Regarding your baked cod dinner, that piece of cod passeth all understanding. Man, that's restaurant quality. I think even Irish Dave, who is no small punster in his own right, will probably approve. That piece of cod passeth all understanding. Yeah, it almost passed all viewing. The damn thing was so small. Thank you, Captain Mary. I need a giggle from time to time. We are we are 6 minutes into the second hour of this Moran Monday, and lots of Morans yet remain. Lines open, though, 304-658-3333. It's hard to say at this point in time which line you're going to land on, but that's more for me than it is for you, as long as we can get you in here. On Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. And we are right where we were an hour ago in terms of fundraising. We started out the evening needing $345, and we've gotten it down to 320, thanks to Beth and Sal, and sure enough do need to get it down considerable more if this little 10-year-old day-by-day, week-by-week, month-by-month undertaking is to continue. Because it is. It's day-by-day, week-by-week, and month-by-month. So, you know, 32 people, you know the math. But please, if you can, help us to not have a huger hole tomorrow. PayPal button, headonradionetwork.com, and, of course, the traditional mail address is there as well. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello?
Hey, it's Sandra.
Sandra? Oh, my goodness.
Hey, Hillary 2016. You know I don't give a fuck.
Oh, I know. No. I know. Now, I was actually thinking of you earlier today when I was pulling out stories to go on the Horn website. I noticed that some more former Barclays bank officials in the UK went to the big house over the LIBOR scandal. That thing's still got legs.
No, listen, that is such a bad scandal, and I mean, it's just controlled fraud, and no one seems to be willing to people need to go to jail. Whole systems need to be changed. I mean, it's just a complete mess, but no one ever goes to jail here for any banking crimes. And unfortunately, under President Hillary, all we're going to get is another historical presidency and more neoliberalism.
I'm not at all inspired about anything going on in 2016. Maybe because I'm too busy, Sandra, being terrified of 2014.
Well, yeah, I mean, but, you know, that is also a function of, you know, the sad-ass Democrats not getting out their base, you know what I mean? This whole sort of, oh, they're going to, you know, lose because that's how, and that's just bullshit. That's because the Democrats don't seem to want to get their people out for whatever reason.
But I guess there are a few of them now, Democrats, who are beginning to run on Obamacare and not away from it.
Yeah, that's bad, and the experiment in Alaska is interesting because that dude is running on expanding Social Security, and, you know, it's people are keeping an eye on it because, you know, there's a huge division in the Democratic Party, which I'm getting, schooled about it here in California, I mean, where the Republican Party is essentially dead. So now you have people pretending to be Democrats, attracting Koch brother money, attracting Walmart money, attracting all the usual money, and, you know, trying to suppress the, quote, liberal wing of the Democratic Party here in the state of California. And Jerry Brown has turned out to be such a nightmare. It's like, shit. Should have had Meg Whitman. She wouldn't have been no worse.
Oh, man, coming from you, that's a mouthful.
Yeah. So,
I remember you not being particularly fond of Miss Meg.
No. She's, you know, it's a horror show. But, I mean, Brown is he's in love with the prison. He is trying to expand Dignity Catholic health care to make it as large as Kaiser. And, you know, they don't want to cover end-of-life concerns and, you know, reproductive.
Yeah, God forbid somebody needs the morning after pill.
Yeah, so it's really quite disturbing, some of the things that are happening in the state. And, also I can just tell you I'm, like, moving to L.A. in June.
No, you're moving?
Yes, I'm moving.
Yeah, goodbye, God, I'm moving to Los Angeles.
Yes, I am, you know, so.
And you've spent some time down there by now, I presume.
Yeah, I've been down there. Yeah, well, you know, whatever, the beach is hella nice, but it's very dense, the population. I was like, you know, I mean, I'm living in little old Sacramento, L.A., that's big, you know, big city.
Yeah, and you pay big money for small places, if I understand correctly.
Oh yeah, no. It's the whole thing is, yeah, it's a huge leap of faith. But what can I say? Hillary 2016.
Bring it. Sure.
No, listen, I shouldn't be so cryptic. Yeah, so I can just tell folks. Yeah, I work for NOW, National Organization for Women.
Can you? I mean, you can say that and everything, and you're not going to get all bent.
No, it's all right.
Well, I got to think they're a better organization for you being in it, Sandra.
It's a small operation, to be honest. But because it's all divided up by regions. But yeah, so that's what I've been doing.
Well, I gotta think that's going to be a good outlet for your hell-raising capabilities.
Yeah, no, it's interesting, but there's a lot, I mean, you know, it's sort of sociopaths all around, you know, truly. But, I mean, the people that I'm working with are quite interesting, I have to say. They know a lot, fuck.
Well, and I trust if they're like they are nationally, there's not a hell of a lot of back down in them, is there?
Well, you know, like I said, it's regional, and like with any organizations, there's all sorts of issues.
Keep climbing that ladder. I gotta tell you, I mean, I feel kind of privileged that you called in this evening because, you know, between Clive and, I think somebody, what was it, maybe Friday night, somebody said, conjure Sandra, for God's sakes, conjure Sandra, because of the whole Clive and Bundy going to explain things to us. And now we got the L.A. Clippers thing going on.
Yeah, listen, I don't even know what to say about the Sterling thing, because, you know, apparently it just pulled the Band-Aid off. I mean, he's like a known racist. And a few years ago when he was ill, apparently they were just hoping, oh, my God, please just die already. But, see, it's on the NBA. They didn't deal with it, and now it's come to bite them in the ass.
Well, but I got a question. Because there was, you know, the big story that was being talked about over the weekend and into today was, well, the NAACP has canceled their award for him.
Yeah, but they gave him one before, so.
I know, and that's my question. Does Clive and Bundy get one next? I mean, what are the standards for this award?
Well, obviously you can't talk about black people with a skank, but you can not rent to them and treat them like shit for your whole business career, and you can still get an award. So I'm sort of like, yeah, those people are playing still. Why are you playing? You know, so I'm a bit disturbed by that because they really need to not play. You know, they need to stop.
Well, I forget who was it that called on the Clippers players to just, you know, sit the hell out the playoffs.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's a strain of thought that's going on, which I completely agree. I think, you know, what are you doing? You can take off a jersey and walk around the circle. That ain't doing nothing, motherfuckers. You guys need to not play because did you hear what that fool said about you and yours? Shit, Magic Johnson was like, no, I'll be dead before I roll up in this building. I'm like, exactly.
And Kareem's bent. And LeBron is bent.
He's always in a bad mood, so that's perfect. So, you know. No, but I'm sort of a bit tripping on, oh, we're going to play, and it's right. Yeah. Why are you doing that? You know. You
well, they played after this whole thing blew up, and it didn't work out at all well.
No, but the whole world would support them if they just said, you know, screw that, because it's just nasty. And plus, I must add, now I guess maybe I'm wrong, but I did think that you had to conjure Dolores Claiborne. You know, revenge is an unhappy woman. Best friend, because I think Mrs. Sterling might have recorded that bullshit.
That was the first thing that came to mind.
Because why would that skank want to give up her meal ticket? She wouldn't.
Oh, no. No, no, no.
So why she going to record him? You know, she want all that nice stuff. But anyway.
Maybe Mrs. Sterling's private investigator with the spike mic.
Right, and she's suing, so to me it looks more like she's the one that turned up the mic, and it's hilarious if that's the case, you know, but he just sounded disgusting.
Well, did you ever notice there's apparently a photo morgue out there of these nasty people looking really nasty? I mean, I saw one today of his craggy-ass face, and he looks like he's about 12 months pregnant.
Oh, no. I mean, if you ever visit any time on Instagram, it's nasty, okay? It's just, that whole platform is just not. I mean, yeah. Pinterest is about as far as I go.
Yeah, I'm getting into Instagram a little bit late, you know. I got into Twitter okay. Facebook still kind of baffles me. But the next stop is going to be Vines.
Well, Vines are okay. I think that has great potential because of the brevity of it. But the Instagram where people, you know, gap legs and they're nasty, whatever, it's like, yeah, that's interesting. No, it's not. Tumblr is okay if you can, you know, if you like to sort of look at weird posts and weird pictures. But it's not really offensive. But I just think Instagram is sort of like remember MySpace?
Yeah,
it has that flavor about it. I don't know.
God, can you still call MySpace up on the internet even? Jesus.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some archive somewhere. I mean, digital afterlife.
Yeah, Rupert bought it and it just died.
Oh God, no, that was it was pretty ghetto that, but no, I just thought that that guy, you know, the whole tape is just so, you know, it finishes off with, oh, let me just blow you off so you can shut up. I feel about it. So it was pretty gruesome. I was like, ew, there's no such thing as a free lunch.
Quit.
Sorry, I mean, the price is high.
Oh, and the dignity is low.
Oh, my God, yeah, exactly so. But no, so I can't even... That story is just, I find it, the Bundy thing is also extra pathetic, and to see these people backing off like Krautheimer and that freak Hannity, you know, shut the fuck up, you know what, you know, you're too late, and I didn't know they were having like weeks of freak meetings up there before it got to be big news.
Oh, yeah, and some of the stuff that came out of there, I was reading it over the weekend, it was like, holy mackerel. I mean, the crazy that was just boiling out of there, it was just right-wing birther, deather, tenther, booger-eaterism gone wild.
No, but you were talking about the Georgia stuff. Yeah, that's so disturbing. The whole, was that baseball, that story?
Yeah, Little League. Little League.
Like, oh my God! So yeah, that's a place not to visit. Okay.
But yeah, right. Yeah, just staying away now.
No, seriously. I mean, I just, you know, these places are just regressing.
Well, I mean, dig it. Yeah, I mean, you know how sports fans are. Mm. You can now take your firearm to a Hawks game, to a Falcons game, to a Braves game, and let's get that name changed, by the way, somewhere soon. But, you know, the dude bobbles a bad hop, and there's a guy in the stands that says, nah, that's your last error, buddy. You know, bam!
Yeah. No, I mean, it's sort of like, remember that soccer player that missed some sort of move, and they ended up murdering him?
Yeah, he was from Colombia, right? And the drug lord took him out. Oh, okay, can we be really shallow sports people for just a second, Sandra?
Oh, okay.
Coming out of European soccer, there's a bit of a controversy cooking right now. They're back to throwing bananas at players again.
They were fining and suspending people hugely, and they had died down. So now they back to that again.
Yeah, dude got a Brazilian player for I forget who got a banana thrown at him.
Oh, no. Oh, God. And it's sort of like the, oh, no, we have a match in Eastern Europe. Keep your family at home if you dark. I mean, can you imagine?
Oy.
Bring your girlfriend. Don't bring your family. Watch your back if you're playing in the... Well, it was in the Ukraine. I guess they ain't doing that no more for the minute. But, you know, that part of the world is not very good for soccer people of color.
Well, it's not like we're getting any relief. But, you know, it's getting worse instead of better, isn't it? I mean, we're in some sort of retrograde motion.
I don't know, but I was laughing at, you know, I mean, you know, even Obama just looked really tired even talking about it. He was like, you know what I'm saying? It's like, I was thinking, well, I didn't even know he was going
to. No, if he just showed up with his palm on his forehead and said, oh, no, yeah. Not this shit again.
Yeah, no, it was kind of like that, too. It was like, oh, you know, I mean, his response, it was really sort of. I don't know. You know, I guess he's trying to save his energy because he's trying to gin up this war on Putin because of gas.
Oh yeah, I noticed today that NATO is taking extra steps to ramp up their air surveillance of the Baltic. There are some. They frighten me, Sandra. There's people out there who want a shooting war out of this.
I know, but the people who want to shoot war is the U.S. because it ties in. You have to listen to Brzezinski and the Grand Chessboard. It ties into their pivot to the east, you know, the whole containing China. But the problem is, why would the Europeans want to pay double and triple for their gas, which is what the U.S. proposition is offering them? Because they're interdependent with their energy needs with Russia. That's a fact. Germany plants run on Russian energy. So, you know, Fraulein Merkel is kind of like, I don't know about this, Obama. Why don't you stop spying on me and just leave it alone? But
I loved it when Joe Biden went to Ukraine, a week and a half ago, and said the answer to your problems is fracking?
Yeah, as soon as he went there, and all of a sudden the fascists who's there went and did an attack on some Russians in the east. So, you know, the U.S. seems to be really pushing this. I'm not saying that Putin isn't or whatever he is, but
yeah.
that doesn't mean that he is the bad guy. I mean, to me, from what I can tell, it looks like the U.S. is the bad guy in this circumstance, because the people in Kiev, those are fascists. They're unelected, and they seem to be pawns of the U.S.
Well, we've never seen a coup that we didn't want to back, now, have we? I mean,
yeah.
Chile, Guatemala, Bolivia.
Yes. No, all I'm saying is that, you know, the optics are kind of weird there, and they seem to really want to... I don't know. A hot war, which is just hard to wrap your head around, you know?
Because we don't exactly have a military capable of waging one. And are we the only people on Earth that don't know that to be a fact?
Well, you know, I mean, but it, you know, when you thought, yeah, but it's absurd that the Europeans would risk paying, you know, huge amounts in energy costs because the U.S. needs to keep its hegemonic power. This is what they call a horizontal arrangement that's happening because the U.S. is losing its power. So that's how a declining superpower operates. So this is sort of, I don't want to say textbook, but yeah.
Well, you know how I am with, I mean, I'm not superstitious, but you know how I am with calendars. And I keep looking down, 1914. Oh, 2014. I guess it's time.
Well, you know, we seem to, you know, it's been how many years now has it been? We're getting that sweet spot of 80 plus years now, aren't we?
Yeah, and I mean, it's like rock and rollers who die at 27. You know, it just is.
Right. Well, it looks like you know, which, I mean, it's a bit, you know, it's a bit of a worry because in the meanwhile, Obama is still talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership as if that's for real. You know, so I'm like, oh boy, you know, he tripping. You know.
Well, I mean, the sociopaths on Wall Street are going to keep hollering that until they get what they want.
Yeah,
but the other thing I got to bring up, because Dr. Bill has been the only one talking about this, Sandra. Have you seen anything about this constitutional convention bullshit?
No, listen, I haven't seen.
Oh, you need. I mean, not to tell you what you need, but you need to dig around a little bit in this. I mean, there are enough states now who have voted with their legislatures to call for a constitutional convention within the meaning of Article 1, Section 5, that it kind of has to be done.
I know, but what is it for? Is this for the popular vote thing?
No, this is the right wing wet dream. You know, Mark Levin's out there with his Liberty Amendments. George Will and that crowd are hollering that, you know, it needs to be a constitutional convention for one day that only deals with a balanced budget amendment. But the thing is, you know, once the lights go on this thing, and don't think for a minute that the Koch brothers won't be writing the big money check. You know, what Dr. Bill's been pointing out is that once the thing opens, game is on. Because that's exactly what happened with the first one. You know,
the last thing we need, because our Constitution is fossilized, but we really don't need it to be dealt with the crazies that are running around now, because they're all wigging out, because we got to do something before a country goes completely brown. That's what it's all about.
Oh, it's scaring the bejesus out of them.
It's about that, and also trying to lock in their Austrian economic agenda for the next 70 years too.
Yeah, but are you following this sort of explosion of the Piketty phenomenon?
Oh no, that's great. No, listen, I'll tell you. I know when something is really interesting when Colin Cowherd is talking about reading that motherfucker.
No,
like yes. Yes, Bob. I said no. He didn't know who he was talking about, but I knew who he was talking about. I'm like, are you kidding me? Are you? Because he's all, you know, he was tripping about, yeah, well, concentration of wealth, it is a bit of a problem. I'm like, yes, nigga, it is.
Well, I mean, it's in Salon. David Brooks is having a polka-dotted conniption. Over it. I mean,
they don't have a response, and it's interesting if they look at the demographics, the rich people are reading that book.
But I mean, isn't it, I guess I haven't read it yet, I'm gonna read it, but isn't it Marx?
I got a copy of it. No, listen, I know, I'm right there. I got my copy the other day. It's some huge ass 700 or 600 page. It says Capital, you know, like DOS.
Yeah, no, where's the DOS?
And a dude is, you know,
I mean, he's talking about wealth concentration in oligarchic hands.
And a historical roundup of how this shit's been going on and, you know, how to sort of, yeah, it's all in there. So I'm looking forward to trying to plow through it. There's an interesting executive treatment of it for $2 for Kindle. Which I recommend, because the guy breaks it down really quickly in this little Kindle thing, too. $2.
So they haven't got the 700 pages on Kindle yet.
No, they don't, which is what. But that's all right, though. I have the book, and, you know, I look hella pretentious with my book, so it's great.
Yeah, 700 pages.
Yeah, I didn't realize it would be that big.
I mean, did you get the trade paperback or what?
They tripping. No, I got the hardback, and it was $29 or something like that, and because it wasn't available, then it just showed up. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, so all sorts of people are talking about that book. And he did a presentation via The Nation. I don't know if you were able to catch any of that.
No.
Because, you know, he has that little cute French accent going on. And he was wowing the people. So.
Well, I find it very interesting when even old friends of mine who are, you know, libertarians or, you know, what have you, start asking me about it on Facebook.
Well, the problem is that I guess his you know, the research is, yeah, they're having a hard time coming up with a response to it, to what he's saying. And what he's proposing is, you know, to tax that shit back into the dark ages, which is what we all think should happen, because the idea of taxation is to do exactly what it needs to control the inherited wealth. Like, you know, for that pig in L.A., he inherited all that money from his father. He didn't work for that shit. So we need to tax them people to alleviate the coming inheritance. It's going to be like Game of Thrones up in this motherfucker, which is something I've been into.
Oh, please, no dragons.
No, I've been watching that show because it's so crazy. But, you know, just, I'd be interested to hear what you think of that book when you get the chance to read it.
Well, lo and behold, it is on Kindle now.
Oh, good, because it wasn't when I ordered it.
It is the most expensive book I have ever seen on Kindle, Sandra.
How much is it?
$21.99.
Oh, right, yeah, no, usually Kindle is, I'm all over the $7.89, $3.99, that's my range.
Yeah, because I can get the hardcover sent for $23.97 with no shipping.
I like hard books, so I don't have any problems with having this one, but I was wondering why they didn't have it on Kindle, I thought that was kind of odd.
It wasn't marketed for, you know, the proles. I mean, Harvard published it, and it was expected to just, you know, be another economic snooze fest, and then, bang, it started. I mean, it really is an interesting phenomenon.
Yeah. I just think, you know, that the inequality globally is just, it's just so apparent, you know, and it's becoming a huge problem, and the exponential growth of it is what's also really disturbing that up to, you know, and it's also the solutions is probably what's really freaking people out, because it's to eliminate the power of capital. So if you do that, you know, then those people are going to lose their...
Right, and by default, doesn't that mean an increase in the power of labor?
Well, yeah, and anyone who earns income. We're not talking about, we're talking about just, you know, people earning income versus these asset vulture parasites that we're dealing with.
By extension then, Sandra, and I'm just kind of reaching out into, you know, ripple effects. If some of this inherited capital gets taxed out of their hands, does that maybe take a bite out of some of these plutocrats' willingness to throw billions of dollars into political campaigns?
Well, yeah, that's the whole thing. I mean, the you know, along with this guy's book, there's been endless reports now of how cutting taxes is a disaster, okay? One report after another just saying the whole idea of cutting taxes is horrific. And, you know, I mean, the best invention in the world was the progressive tax code, which is all together now an American thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's just kind of, the solutions are here, right here in our fucked up country. But the plutocrats really have everything, you know, by the short hair, by the throat or whatever. So I'm not too sure what has to go on. I hate to think that we have to have some sort of ecological, financial collapse, no ice in the Arctic before anything changes.
Well, and that's something I was mentioning early in the program. Right. You know, it's so easy for us to all get sort of fractalized or compartmentalized, you know, worrying about, and I'm not saying that any of these worries aren't legitimate, Sandra, but worrying about the Keystone XL pipeline, worrying about the assault on women's reproductive rights. You know, they're getting ready to, they're trying to close the last abortion clinic in Mississippi. You know.
Now, I saw that black doctor talking about it. I forget his name, but he, like, flies from Chicago to Yeah.
Right, but we've got all of these pigeonholed issues. But if for instance the Republicans get their dream of a constitutional convention, you know, our side ain't ready for that. I guess we've been, hey, look at the teabaggers, ain't they funny? Well, are we going to be laughing when we open a constitutional convention brought to you by the Koch brothers?
Yeah, no. I have nothing to say to that. That just sounds
chilling.
I mean, it just sounds just scary, but it also sounds just entirely predictable, right?
Unfortunately. And it's predictable across the spectrum, predictable that they would want this, and predictable that our response would be to, look, a squirrel.
Well, no, think about the Koch brothers had $45 billion in, I guess, 2009. They now have $100 billion.
Man, the power of compounded interest.
Yeah, this is the sort of stuff that we're looking at. And that's going to be passed on to some fucking offspring. You see what I'm saying? And then that's why I mean Game of Thrones.
Like, yeah, some winner of the Lucky Sperm Club.
Yeah, and that has to be put in check. I mean, that's sort of, you know, I mean, it's so bad. I mean, think about what's going on in England today. They have all this sort of Oxfam and a major nonprofit volunteer type agencies refusing to participate in, wait for it, the Cameron government is making unemployed people force volunteer to get their benefits.
Wow, that's kind of not volunteering anymore, is it?
Volunteering isn't, so they hope a whole campaign saying keep volunteerism voluntary. I mean, I don't mean to laugh, but this is where we're at. And it's very disturbing because the disposable people are being exploited beyond belief now. It's just...
And by extension, disposed of.
Yeah, and also it's just... So you have like the Cameron government doing that kind of crap, which thankfully is exploding in their face.
Yeah, meanwhile, as Robert from Australia pointed out to me last week, to us, Tony Abbott's dearest, fondest wish is to restore knighthoods and damehoods in Australia.
Wow, no. Well, when is that? What is that? Everyone needs to work for $2, like the African bitch. Is she in the government yet? The mining bitch.
Oh dear God.
The name. You know who I'm talking about, right?
Yeah. Don Blankenship with a second X chromosome.
Yeah, she's scary. So I mean, I know she's a you know, has a lot of say in the Abbott government, I bet, you know, because she has lots of power. That's another one that's like, you know, triple her money type of thing.
Right. And, of course, she's got it all, you know, her wealth comes from putting coal on boats to China.
Yeah, well.
Oh, Gina Reinhart.
That's it. Well, God, you know, she's just, I mean, once again, that's also inherited, you know, although she tries to say, you know, she only inherited like $75 billion, and she's turned it into. But see, Bob, you, me, Isaac, a whole host of people, if they got $75 million, will be able to turn that into billions. You understand what I'm saying?
Yep, just waiting for mine.
So that is not a you know, some sort of you know, magnificent achievement. No, bitch. You was born rich, and they gave you the money, and that's how it is.
Right. It's that old joke about what's the easiest way to become a millionaire? Be born with $999,999.99.
Yeah, but see, but that's the scum that's coming up as this concentration of wealth continues. We're not just talking about the scummy Koch brothers anymore. They're into the second generation of passing it on. The Waltons, the next gruesome lot who will be inheriting that wealth. I mean, it's disgusting, you know.
Yeah, and it's going to take long time before to water down the Walton wealth enough that maybe the great 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 grandchildren have to live in only a 5,000 square foot mini mansion.
Well, the thing is that I don't, you know, I do think that you know, I think it's going to be a bit difficult to sort of keep convincing Americans that all that is okay as they're grinding the middle class, you know, into the ground. That's the thing. So they're reading Capital, I guess, the 21st century. I don't know.
And who knew that all you had to do was take the DOS off of the front of it and people would read it? Or maybe, now maybe there's a real hunger for this now.
Oh, no, I just think people need to have explanations for what's going on. Because, you know, anybody who gives just a small thought when you're not working your 70 hours a week knows that something is deeply wrong here, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's...
I think, yeah, that's what it is. And all the sort of bread and circus is not really doing it anymore. I mean, take the Sterling. It's like, you know, wow, you know, sports is something you want to just look at and escape. But no, you know, it's all ugly all around all the time.
Yeah, I mean, all of a sudden, Daniel Stern's not the biggest asshole in sports ownership. I guess he's sitting at home going, hey, I mean, not Daniel Stern, the owner of the Redskins.
Oh, no, but they already lumped him up with this guy, so it's rubbing, you know, I saw a couple of little articles about him and just owners in general and how, why is everyone so upset about this guy you have, and you just named off all the other scum suckers.
Did you notice that Northwestern's football team's unionization vote got impounded?
What does that mean?
Well, the NLRB, Northwestern University, when the Chicago NLRB guy ruled that they could organize, yeah. Northwestern University went whining to D.C., and got the NLRB to hear their appeal and confiscate and impound the unionization vote. So those guys went and either voted for or against forming a union, and nobody really knows what the vote was.
Oh, my God.
You know, because God forbid that we should have to pay minimum wage to college football players.
Well, no, they don't want the classification at all. I mean, it's the same thing with these truck drivers who they actually won one round, and you know, the plutocrats are desperate to not have classification so they can have, you know, slaves. I mean, if you have to pay for every cost to do your job, company store, I mean, that's a win-win for them.
Sure it is. And how far from that to paying off in company scrip instead of legal tender?
Well, that's already going on with this sort of...
Oh, gift cards.
Sharing economy that is going on where, wait a minute, when you're in the city, your ass is locked up, beat up, shot. But now if you're some sort of white boy on the internet, you can run roughshod over the taxi laws and make every dickhead with a car a taxi. And that's not being dealt with because it's, because white.
Yeah, and you know, welcome to the dystopia.
Yeah, it is a dystopia because that's what's going on, and everyone covers all your costs yourself, so you never make any money, and the company can keep lowering the prices, and so you're chasing around people who want to get a cab ride for cheaper and cheaper. Until there's no real cabs around because they've been run out of business, and you're left with the sharing economy. So I mean,
anytime I hear something like that, it always takes me back to that wonderful line from John Sayles' movie Mate One, where the labor organizer says, "All we got in common is our misery, so the least we can do is share it."
Yeah, well, and they're also doing that with housing too. You know, you can rent. You know, some corner in your kitchen to some stranger.
Oh yeah, we see car. You know those skins that you can put on cars now. You know,
yeah.
People were getting them for decorate. Well, now I guess companies are buying advertising space on people's individual automobiles.
Oh yeah, no, they've been doing that for quite a while.
Yeah, brought to you by Carl's Jr. I mean, I'm seeing it here now.
Oh right, no, I didn't. Basically, you're going to be turned into a revenue stream. I mean, I always go back to the Adobe. I call it the Adobe-ification because right now, if you want to get Adobe products, you can pay $29 a month forever. But if you lose your job or you can't cough up the $29, well, bye-bye, and you're in the clouds. If all your work is in the clouds and you can't pay the $29, fuck you very much.
Yeah, and have you noticed that the cell phone companies are moving to a similar plan? It used to be, and they said it was because, well, you know, people are tired of waiting 2 years to get their next new gizmo. So what we'll do is we'll sell you your gizmo now for $25, $30 a month for 20 months, or 26, or 30.
Yeah, no, that's the same. So here's the revenue. So you can only function in this sort of predatory economy if you have some kind of income. Once that stops, you don't own anything.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Right, and I mean, it's and all of you know all of this started, it seems, doesn't it, with music. That you know you can't you know those of us who remember vinyl, you know, you went and you bought a 45 at the store and you listened to the 45 and there you go, and that's all gone now.
Right, and they've like gone to court to make it so if you get a copy of something. And you try to copy it like you would in real life with stuff, and they're trying to say, oh no, you know, you can't do that. So, I mean, there are some saving grace. I was laughing over the weekend because some dipshit academics trying to say they had copyright over the whole collection of Marx and Engels. The digital,
yeah,
and lo and behold, and I did it too because I just couldn't resist. I took my ass to Pirate Bay and downloaded that motherfucker, and I have the whole copy, all 9 gigabytes of it, because it's just so no, you cannot demand royalties on Marx and Engels. Fuck you.
Yeah, because that's so, you know, that's almost enough to get them up out of the dirt, isn't it?
Well, and then they posted some whiny-ass post about it. It's just like, well, you effed up. Because everyone just said, yeah, it was posted up on some torrent site, and it's been downloaded and bit-synced all over the fucking world. So much for that copyright. And that's what's going to happen more and more because, you know, you ain't going to have Song of the South. You're going to have, like, people bit-syncing everything. And trading that shit all over the place without the cloud. There's technology around where you can just peer-to-peer and, you know, challenge the what they're planning for us. But it is a bit of a worry because the FCC looks like it's already been bought and paid for by...
Yeah, that fix looks like it's in.
And so that's a bit of a worry, although we'll see. I'm not completely saying it's gone yet, but I think people are going to be real upset when they realize that, you know, the rich is having a fast internet and we're not.
Did you see that Supreme Court case? I mentioned it briefly, Sandra. The one between ABC and what's it called? Aereo. Arguments were heard in the Supreme Court, I guess, a week and a half ago.
Well, what is this related to?
Well, Aereo is basically an antenna company that will broadcast TV content to your PC so you can watch TV on your PC.
Oh, okay. I think I vaguely know what you're talking about. Yeah.
I mean, they're like in 12 cities, and, of course, ABC had drew the short straw on this one. So they had to sue over it, trying to put Aereo out of business. And interestingly, Aereo's lawyers argued before the Supreme Court, you know, it's fine. You put us out of business, you're taking the cloud down, too. And all of a sudden, you got a whole bunch of new allies going. They're going, what?
Yeah, no. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I think that, you know, the whole open internet is not going to be as cut and dry, but it is a worry that Wheeler is a Comcast lobbyist, and he has 2 lawyers, and 1 fought against net neutrality. So this is what we have in government right now, proposing some bogus bullshit that's looking more and more like The Sopranos all the time.
Well, I mean, the day-to-day frustrations of dealing with bandwidth here, we've been so hamstrung just trying to get a stream out. And it's crazy stuff. And like I mentioned at the beginning of the program tonight, the phone system went down. So, you know, the hunt group doesn't even hunt right. And this is just this isn't even a big player in terms of bandwidth. And they'll probably get squeezed out somewhere along the way. And ultimately, you'll see the same thing happen. It already is happening, isn't it, Sandra? To the internet that's happened to mass media. Everything gets concentrated in the hands of six uber mega corporations, and the rest of us pound sand.
Well, no, but the thing is, the reason why this is so out of control and so just blatant is because they have to create artificial scarcity. This is what they have to do in order to extract more money from people, because there's dark fiber, there's endless fiber, there should be no problem with bandwidth anywhere on the planet.
Right, and even the bandwidth we have here is laughable. American bandwidth is laughable as compared to Asia.
Yeah, but it's not. But the thing is, it's artificial scarcity. And
yeah.
The FCC would just treat the internet like, you know, a common carrier. We wouldn't have this problem to a certain extent. I mean, you know, there's problems with overreach by, I guess, the government, but we see what they do. They get bought by the corporations, and then they're the government, you know?
Yeah. Half the time, the government that these teabaggers are bitching about is the government that's been bought by the people who are financing the teabaggers, but they're too damn dim to figure that out.
Yeah, we'll see. I do think that this is going to be more, it's not going to be just completely cut and dry because of what's at stake. I mean, you know, you're back to taking away something from people that they're used to, and that's always a dodgy proposition, you know what I mean? So we'll see, because they're going to have to talk real fast to try to tell people that, oh, you need to have slower internet. You know,
well, in a way, I think you can draw a parallel, can't you, to healthcare. Once people have, for instance, the expanded Medicaid, you're going to have a hell of a time taking that away from them. And it's the same in many ways. It's the same thing with the internet. I mean, healthcare itself is artificial scarcity, is it not?
Well, in this country, and it's deadly.
Yeah.
I mean, wasn't it Brazil that just signed a law to sort of expand the internet or bandwidth as a utility or something? I can't remember the exact language, but they did something, you know.
Yeah, that it's a public utility, and
yeah.
A couple of years ago, Finland declared the internet to be
a human right. Yeah, you know, and so I mean, and that's how it should be treated. So, you know, it's just, it's so bad what they're trying to do here. It's outrageous.
Well, and the $64 question is, will we let them?
Yeah, I guess we'll see. You and I are old enough to know what it was like without remote, the internet, and all the other sort of stuff, but a lot of people, you know, they don't know what a fax machine is, so good luck to them.
Well, I'm waiting for the day that they stop putting manual channel change buttons on the side of flat-screen TVs. That day may have already dawned.
No, I mean, I think the twins was bitching about that the other day, trying to get up because they couldn't find the remote, and I'm like laughing. Oh, boy.
Go change the channel at the TV.
Oh, then they just forget about the TV and they move to the tablet realities. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, one in one corner and one in the other, watching some boy something or another. You know, they're at that age now.
Right. And in the same room and utterly removed from each other's.
Right.
Yeah.
You know,
it could just as well be in a dark room on the far side of the moon.
Right. Well, anyway, I have to. I discovered, somebody tweeted it, but it's just, you know, so adorable. It's a picture of a 28-ish, maybe late 20-ish, Brando with his kitty. He's kissing his kitty, Marlon Brando. So cute.
Aww. That's back when he was kind of a looker, right?
Yeah, he was fine, man. So I guess that's my.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the younger part of the Horn audience is going, "Who?"
That's my white boy appreciation for the minute that Paul Newman and Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. That's also extra hot.
Yeah, Stella. Yeah.
Anyway,
hey, Sandra. Good luck with everything. Keep in touch, please. Don't get lost in L.A. You know, you got a reception committee down there that will help you.
All right. Yeah. No, I'll try not to get lost.
All right. We'll talk soon. Awful good to hear from you.
Take care.
See you. Bye. Sandra, soon to be formerly of Northern California. God, that was a fun conversation. Got to wrap up and get out of here. Time has slipped away for this Moran Monday, but we've had a darn fine time watching it go, haven't we? I want to put out thanks. We are far from reaching our fundraising goal, but still, many thanks go out to Diane, who, while I was talking with Sandra, took us from 320 in the hole to 280 in the hole. Thank you very much, Diane. She says, this donation is in honor of Sandra calling in tonight. Thanks. Thanks very much. And in the interim between now and tomorrow or whenever you get the podcast, if you want to help dig that hole out a little bit, fill it in. 28 folks at $10 between now and beginning of program tomorrow is where the fundraising needs stand. Thanks, everybody, for your... And oh, wow, thanks, Captain Mary, for the god-awful pun. Thank you so much. The piece of cod that passeth all understanding. I'm gonna order it that way next time. I really am. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you, John Fox in Australia, making an appearance in the chat room this evening. Good evening, John. And thank you to Ben Birch, who has worked so hard to try to resolve some of these bizarre streaming issues. Not a hell of a lot of buffering tonight, and that was a real happy moment. Thank you, Ben Birch, and thanks, of course, go out always to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acheact.org, acheact.org, acheact.org. Go there, get active, reach out, contact your senators. We're working hard in the Senate. It has not been introduced in the Senate. Reach out to your senators, please, and tell them you want to see a Senate version of the ACE Act, H.R. 526. Tell them you want to see it introduced in the Senate now. And thank you in advance for your advocacy. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the Horn.